versus Merch Source. Good morning. We're ready to proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kyle Fleming for Merck Source. I guess I would start by maybe giving a little bit of the background of the case for our viewers here. In 2016, Merck Source entered into a license agreement for several patents with DodoCase. The patents relate to virtual reality headsets, where you slip your mobile phone in and look through a viewer and you can experience 3D viewing. Unfortunately, the parties' relationship deteriorated.
So when was the license agreement?
In 2016. Okay. In December 2017, DodoCase filed a district court action in San Francisco against Merck Source. And approximately 1 month later, Merck Source filed an IPR and two PGRs against three of the patents that it had licensed. Shortly thereafter, the district court entered a preliminary injunction against Merck Source, ordering it to effectively ask the PTAB to withdraw those petitions from consideration.
That has been stayed now.
Nothing's
been happening. Has anything happened in the district court? I mean, are they free to proceed back to the merits? We're still in a PI case, a preliminary injunction case here.
Yeah.
But has the underlying merits case proceeded?
No. So this court granted an emergency motion to stay the preliminary injunction. And in June, I believe, of last year, the district court stayed the district court proceedings pending the PTAB proceedings.
And what's the status of the PTAB proceedings?
The briefing is nearly done, and I believe argument is scheduled for late May.
So they were instituted?
They were instituted.
And when is argument scheduled for?
I believe it's May 21st.
And when does, I mean, they got a year. They got a clock running, so are we getting close to the clock?
The clock has expired I was talking about a one-year provision, yes.
What precisely is being enjoined by the preliminary injunction? I understand that the preliminary injunction orders that the email that you're talking about to the PTAB, asking the PTAB to shut down the case, essentially. Right?
Yes, that's correct.
That seems to me to be more compelling somebody than enjoining somebody. Does it tell DodoCase not to take any further action in the IPR?
No.
What's the enjoinment?
Yeah. So the injunction ordered Merck Source to or the parties to jointly contact the PTAB and to indicate that the court had issued an injunction under this venue or forum selection clause.
What page of the record are you referring to? I assume I know it's in the record. Can you just refer us to the page where the order is?
Sure.
With its exact language.
Page 24 to just save you some time.
Page 24.
Yes.
So the order went to just ordering you to ask the PTAB to withdraw.
Effectively, yes.
It didn't go so far. I think this is odd kind of thing because the district court has no authority to order the PTAB that I know of to cease proceedings or to dismiss the case.
I think that's correct.
So she tells you to go and file a motion to dismiss.
Yes.
And seek dismissal. There's nothing further, right? She doesn't, I mean, I guess, I don't know what I would have done if I were a district court judge and I wanted to stop the PTAB. I guess I could have said, ordered you all to not proceed. I don't know how else to effectuate this.
Right. I don't think the order as entered required anything more than just this preliminary contacting of the board.
And can I ask you the other oddity about this a preliminary injunction? I've never seen one like this. So the other oddity about issuing a preliminary injunction in this case is if you did what she told you to do, and if you were successful, in other words, if the PTAB granted your motion to dismiss, then that would kind of be wouldn't that resolve everything about this case? Because once you've dismissed the case, even if you were to win below on the merits, I think you will have forfeited your ability to go back to the PTAB in that circumstances because there would be a time bar.
That's correct. That's correct. So the time bar in our case, effectively,
a preliminary injunction, the consequences of this preliminary injunction, one of two. Either it's irrelevant because the PTAB doesn't listen to you, which they don't have to.
Correct.
Or if they listen to you, then it's served effectively as a permanent injunction.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And the same could be true the other way as well, right? From the patent owner's point of view, in that even this preliminary injunction might not stop those proceedings and having the PTO reevaluate the patentability of the patent that they had previously issued.
Correct.
I mean, they don't have to, the PTO doesn't have to dismiss the IPR just because you ask.
That's correct. They would not have.
So what happens then? They move forward. Let's assume, hypothetically, they issue a final decision in 3 months, mm-hmm. and they invalidate the patent. So then if let's assume the parallel proceeding, the district court, goes to the merits, issues a permanent injunction, and says, no, you have to adjudicate the validity. Who wins that fight? Who wins that race?
I assume that if the PTAB finds the patents invalid, then that's the end of the inquiry.
So in a way, there's kind of irreparable harm to both of you in the absence of a final decision, right?
Yes.
You know,
I'm not sure I would phrase it that way,
yeah.
but of course.
Yeah, well,
but,
maybe irreparable harm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, certainly we think that.
It's troubling, and I don't, you know, nobody is, I can't point the finger to any one individual
sure.
and say, you got us into this mess, but this seems to be quite a quagmire.
Yeah, I think perhaps the fundamental problem in this, creating this quagmire, was the district court's view that disputes arising out of or under the license somehow applied to the PTAB proceedings. So it wasn't the form or venue clause was not all-encompassing, right? It was written to cover only disputes arising out of or under the party's license.
So what's your best argument? Because that kind of language in a license agreement has in other instances been construed quite broadly.
Yeah, so.
And validity is part and part, I mean, it's clearly a factor in any license agreement. There's an infringement and there's validity. So why isn't she right on that conclusion?
Yeah, because Minetti-Ferro, which is the Ninth Circuit case that deals with applying a contractual form selection clause to non-contract claims. And what Minetti-Ferro says is that we will apply this contractual form selection clause if the non-contract claims either are created by the contract, the rights or duties are created under the contract, or you need to interpret some provision in the contract to resolve this other dispute.
Doesn't our precedent, though, say that, and there are cases where we've written and we've said the arising out or under in a license agreement includes validity challenges, right? So isn't that question already answered?
I don't believe that there's any case out there that says arising out of or under a license includes the validity challenge. There is the General Protect case, which is discussed by the parties, where it was arising out of or relating to a settlement agreement, But the dispute there was an infringement action brought in the ITC.
But what about, I'm looking at, so it's been a long week, mm-hmm. Texas Instruments. There's some very broad language in our opinion in Texas Instruments.
Texas Instruments versus Tessera.
Are you familiar with that case?
Yes. Okay. Again, I think that looking at the specific language that's at issue and the that's used in this particular license agreement, the arising out of or...
Well, the language, I mean, I just have a snippet of a paragraph mm-hmm. from that opinion, but it quotes the language which may arise from, under, or out of, or in connection with this agreement. That's pretty close to your language, right?
Well, I guess I would say that maybe in connection with or some of that other language might be broader than the arising out of or under language.
Well, it went on to say patent infringement disputes do arise from license agreements. You would agree.
Patent infringement disputes do.
There may be an issue, as here, of whether certain goods are covered by the license patents, or the licensee may elect to challenge the validity of the license patent. Mm-hmm. Thus, the governing clause in the present case, as in any patent license agreement, necessarily covers disputes concerning patent issues. So we seem to, unless your argument is the in connection was what we were really focusing on, it seems this arising language has been interpreted very broadly by our court, which we're bound by, right?
Well, I think this is a matter of Ninth Circuit law. The interpretation of a forum selection clause is a question of...
Isn't it, but this is a patent issue. I mean, this is a patent license involving patent validity. So wouldn't the Federal Circuit's law on these specific issues unique to patent law be what applies?
Well, I think the general scope of the clause is it would be Ninth Circuit law. Now, maybe the issue of public policy, can you give up your right to petition the PTAB, or some of these other issues that we raised would be a matter of Federal Circuit law. But I think that the construction of this clause, the scope of this clause is not particularly unique to patent law.
Now,
it just happens to apply.
Your license agreement specifically says that the agreement shall automatically terminate upon the invalidity of the patent, so then you wouldn't have to pay royalties anymore, right?
That's correct.
And I think that was the rationale that the Texas Instruments case was relying on for finding that validity could arise under the agreement is because if the patent is found invalid, then the licensee no longer has to pay the royalty amounts.
Yeah, but I think that the question is the dispute, which in this case the dispute is, are the patents valid? And that's the issue that the PTAB is addressing. Does that issue arise out of or under the license? And I think the answer there is no.
But if you had in connection with that, that's pretty broad.
I think in connection with is broader, and there are some cases that talk about in relation to or relating to as being a broader concept than arising out of or under.
You're not suggesting that a form selection clause that said you can't go to the PTAB, you've got to go to the district court, would be in and of itself a violation of public policy. I mean, we the district court agreed with you, I guess, that under, is it Matamino, I don't remember which Supreme Court case, that you can't have a provision that would preclude you from raising the challenge.
Correct.
But you think just a form where parties voluntarily, I understand you say that's not this case, but if parties voluntarily say any validity disputes here will not be decided by the PTAB, it will be decided by the state forum case, that would be a violation, null and void is a violation of public policy?
Yes, I think we would say that is a violation of public policy because...
Right. In all cases, I mean, they have corresponding jurisdiction. Nothing in the AIA dislodged the district court's ability to adjudicate patent validity, so there is proper, you have a venue to challenge validity.
Yeah, that's true, but I think that, and we cite the MCM case, and some of the other cases where they recognize that the PTAB itself has an interest in being able to review patents that it's already issued.
But can't two business entities decide that they don't want to go to the PTAB and and determining that this particular patent is going to be licensed for particular royalties, include within that that instead of going to the PTAB or to other places even, that it's going to be in a California district court. Why can't two parties do that?
Because I think the public policy interest that exists in favor of the PTAB reviewing its own agency decision and granting that patent in the first place.
How can that be? That would suggest that parties can never settle a case.
Well,
and the option of if there's some sort of global government interest in reviewing every patent before it's enforced, mm-hmm. then it just can't be. That rationale would preclude parties from ever settling a case if that settlement would mean that the PTAB can't review the validity.
Right. Now, settlement cases are different, and I think this court's case, Flexfoot, which was a follow-on to the Lear idea that parties couldn't give up the right to challenge a patent and a license, the validity of a patent and a license. This court carved out an exception, and that is to settle the existing litigation. So there was already the Lear decision that said parties can't contract away the right to challenge a patent. And then Flexfoot says, except in settlement of litigation, because we're going to recognize this countervailing public policy that favors settlements. And I think the same logic can apply here.
Okay. We've exceeded your rebuttal, which will restore.
Okay, thank you.
And let's hear from the other side. Thank you.
Good morning, if it may please the court.
Can I ask you as a threshold matter, who are you representing?
I represent Dodo Case and DDC at the district court.
Okay, and Dodo Case no longer exists as a separate entity. It's part of the other entity?
No, that is incorrect. Dodo Case still exists as a separate entity. Dodo Case transferred the patents at issue in the underlying action, the patents involved in the master licensing agreement, to DDC, and additionally transferred the causes of action from the district court.
So why is Dodo Case here at all? Why isn't it just DDC? Where is your standing in this case?
So originally in October, when Dodo made the transfer to DDC, and this was raised with opposing counsel, we were exploring, because we needed to file a joint status report with the district court to apprise the court of what had been occurring. And we had proposed substituting DDC as the new patent owner and holder of the MLA causes of action for Dodo Case. Opposing counsel had a big problem with this, suggesting that because their counterclaims sought damages against Dodo Case for being the prevailing party under the MLA, that Dodo Case had a liability. So, of course, we said, fine, we'll leave Dodo Case in this case. That way there is no concern. You have your right, and it has created somewhat of a quagmire now.
Thing happen at the PTAB? Who's the party in the PTAB proceedings?
So the patent owner is DDC. Now, the PTAB also has the concept of a real party in interest. Dodo has not been specifically identified as a real party in interest because, as our PTAB counsel understands it, that requires control, which Dodo Case does not have. But they obviously have an interest, as can be seen from the agreement transferring the rights. They have a financial interest, and they also have a recapture interest, potentially, in these patents. So Dodo is interested, but for all practical purposes,
can you tell
DDC...
us again what's your injury, what's your damages in this matter? And I'm going back to Chief Judge Prost's question regarding standing. I have a difficulty understanding what's your stake in this game.
Well, so the underlying action, it started as a breach of the master licensing agreement by Mercsource. So breach of contract is the underlying aspect. And the reason why infringement was not exactly what was pled in the original complaint is because there was a sell-off provision. So the exact moment of transferring from a breach of royalties owed under the contract issue to an infringement issue was uncertain. But this case was brought as a breach of the contract for failure to pay royalties and other breaches as well. At one point, this converts to an infringement case because the MLA has now been terminated. It is now, and the sell-off period has expired, it is now an infringement case. So There are both damages for breach of the agreement as well as the potential for infringement damages.
Okay, and what about the question we were having earlier, the discussion with your friend about, I use the term irreparable harm, and that's not the right term. But the district court's preliminary injunction here compelled them to go to the PTAB and try to get the case dismissed. If, in fact, that they had been successful, they had complied with the order of the district court, been successful, wouldn't that foreclose them from ever, because of the time bar, from ever pursuing a PTAB proceeding so that if ultimately they won on the merits and the district court concluded that this forum selection clause does not include PTAB proceedings, it's moot. I mean, because they can't win anyway because effectively this preliminary injunction has precluded them from ever going back to the PTAB. So how can that be right? That just doesn't feel right.
And I understand the concern. And I think the reality is that MergeSource, as the defendant, always has the right to challenge the patents. They can challenge them in the district court and, in fact, asserted counter.
I'm talking about the PTAB proceeding.
Right, and the PTAB proceeding had the one-year time bar.
Right, so now, that part, that would effectively, if they got the dismissal that the judge, as a preliminary injunction, ordered them to seek here, preliminary injunctions are supposed to be temporary. They're not supposed to resolve necessarily the underlying case and the result and obviate the need for. But don't you agree that in this circumstance, the preliminary injunction would effectively have been a permanent injunction?
I think that it goes both ways, as Judge Stoll stated, because.
Well, why don't you answer my question? Yes, there's another piece to this. I agree with Judge Stoll, but at least looking at this lane.
Well, and we put us back in the time frame of when we were arguing on the emergency motion to stay the district court's order. Because at that time, December 13th is the trigger for the one-year statute of limitations under the PTAB. They could have sought expedited briefing to go ahead and try and resolve this promptly. Instead, they sought the emergency motion. And all they stated was they may not reach a decision from this.
You're suggesting they could have, after the PI, they could have gone to the PTAB and say emergency motion to expedite this proceeding?
No, I'm saying that on appeal, they could have sought, this court has a procedure for expedited briefing requests. December 13th was their cutoff. They could have potentially made the December 13th deadline and received an order from this court by December 13th. Instead,
Maybe.
But the point is that irreparable harm requires actual, not speculative irreparable harm. Meanwhile, Dodo case has been forced to litigate on two fronts and did so much.
Can I ask you, on that point, I mean, 2 points on that. One is one of the arguments in this case is now that you've been taken over by a larger entity, a lot of the district court's rationale for the preliminary injunction, which is you're a small guy, this is going to be a hardship, yada-da, has now disappeared. So that's one point. But the second point is, even if you were still the party here, welcome to Patland. I mean, in every case, given the AIA and parallel proceedings, every patent owner, no matter what the size, is potentially faced with the need to not litigate in two forms. I mean, you get a stay and you don't have to litigate simultaneously. But that's the world of patent law now. So one, am I right that circumstances has dramatically changed as the basis for what for her granting the PI in the first instance? And secondly, why was that a valid consideration in the first instance?
So first of all, the circumstances with respect to Dodo case and DDC have not changed significantly. DDC is not some multinational corporation like MergeSource. But regardless of that, the district court, in relying on irreparable harm, while there was a declaration from the owner of Dodo case, specifically identified some hardships that they would face.
Because of who they were, what their size were, things that were generic to them, not necessarily to DDC, right?
Right, but I want to be very clear that the district court ultimately relied on this court's precedent in General Protect, which said—
Are we going to see that in the opinion that we're reviewing, or are you talking about something outside of the opinion we're reviewing? Because we can look at the opinion that is under review here where she says specifically in talking about irreparable harm, she's clearly talking about Dodo case, right? She's not talking about DDC. Is there some sort of paper where she says, it doesn't matter whether it's Dodo case or it's DDC, I come to the same conclusion?
No, because Merck Source deprived the district court of that opportunity.
How?
Because as soon as Merck Source learned of the transfer of rights to DDC in October, November, they could have raised this issue with the district court and said, Your Honor, pursuant to Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 4 or pursuant to FRCP 60 or 62.1, there's been a change of circumstances. Please modify, suspend the injunction.
And they haven't done that. Have they made that argument to us? Is the argument I see them making to us is that the whole thing is moot.
Correct.
Because DDC sold the patents. I mean, Dodo case sold the patents to DDC. I don't see them arguing that the preliminary injunction should be modified or should be sent back for the district court to reconsider under the irreparable harm component.
But that is, I think, exactly what their motion to dismiss at this court is asking, is saying, dismiss this case, vacate the district court's order, and then the district court can now consider whether DDC would prevail under a motion for a preliminary injunction, which is now going to be however many more months into the future, at which point the PTAB will probably already reach a decision on the merits of the patent.
Do you know what the cutoff date is? So the hearing is scheduled for
May 21st, I believe.
May 21st.
And the one-year timeline would run from institution is mid-late August of this summer.
Okay. So then getting back to the point that Judge Stoll raised, the other side of the coin, which is in the absence of a preliminary injunction, you're likely, you or DDC is going to be, let's assume hypothetically, the PTAB invalidates the patents. So is your argument that effectively, in the absence of a preliminary injunction, stopping them from doing that, effectively you're going to lose your right if you prevail on the merits to have the validity dispute adjudicated exclusively by the district court?
Well, that's certainly the case. So if the PTAB makes a ruling before this issue, the forum selection clause issue, is decided, then that may be completely lost forever. But I would argue that the irreparable harm has continued, forced Dodo case to sell its rights in and to the patents and the underlying cause of action because they could no longer fight the fight. They call this monetary damages, but you have to have enough money to get to the end.
Anybody go to the district court and say, this is so unusual and these are such strange circumstances, please, please, leaving aside the preliminary injunction, please decide the merits as promptly as possible. Because this has been pending for a while now, and I understand usually you stay everything and the district court doesn't proceed, but has anybody tried to get the district court to act on the merits so that we will at least eliminate some of these preliminary issues?
No, the case was stayed after the preliminary injunction was issued.
Did somebody ask the judge to stay it, or did she just on her own?
I mean, after it was brought up on appeal on the likelihood of success, it's subsuming the merits into the likelihood of success, and I think the court could have been.
Yeah, but there's a difference. There's been no merit determination here. There's been no permanent injunction. I mean, part of the quagmire we're in is because this has not been adjudicated finally for our review. We're only in a preliminary. Even if there's a likelihood of success of the merits, I mean, that's not final. That's not over.
And there has not been a request for a permanent injunction on the merits, no.
What do you think would be the proceedings that the district court would have to undergo in order to decide whether this forum selection clause is valid and actually would apply and actually would have prevented Merck Source from seeking the IPR in the first place?
I think the court has already undergone that procedure, and even though it was a preliminary injunction, the court understood.
You're saying there doesn't have to be a trial, there doesn't have to be witnesses, there doesn't have to be any extra procedure, there just needs to be a summary judgment determination first.
Merck Source has said themselves on this appeal, this is all a matter of law. This is just how
is
do we...
Is there a pending motion for summary judgment?
No, there is no pending motion for summary judgment.
Why not? I mean, that's your side. Right?
Well, the case has been stayed. And again, I think that in entering the preliminary injunction, even though titled a preliminary injunction, as you recognize, it would have the effect in some ways of being permanent.
On whose motion is the case stayed?
I believe it was on a joint agreement of the parties that given the appeal and the PTAB proceedings that we would stay all action of the district court because there's still breach of contract claims that will exist even if the patents are ultimately determined to be invalid.
Let's assume the preliminary injunction lived. And they went to the PTAB, and the PTAB says, forget it. We're not dismissing it. Then you have to live with that. The district court has to live with that. What are the rights of the client, of the patent owner, left here? Are they going to say, if the patent is invalidated by the PTO, what's left of this case?
Well, there are a few things that are left. I don't think they matter for this appeal. There is a matter of payment of royalties before they actually gave notice of the belief of invalidity.
Okay, so there's still some money.
There's still some money to be gained. I want to hop on to this issue again, and it was brought up before on the opening. What was the district court's order? The district court said send an email to the PTAB, and if they are willing to hear motions to dismiss, file them. This gives two bites at the apple to the PTAB to decide if it wants to dismiss these proceedings. It could say, we don't even want to receive motions to dismiss.
Right.
And then it could say, we've received them, but we're not ruling in your favor.
Sure.
Right? Okay. And this leaves all the discretion with the PTAB. And there's a lot of public policy argument trying to go ahead and put
their feet. I don't know. I have no idea. If I'm a PTAB judge and I'm sitting there, I don't know what their rules are dealing with this. I don't know what standard they use. I have no idea whether they would have to look into the underlying merits of this and see whether they agree. I mean, this is just a whole new world.
And I don't know what they look at.
And I think this is exactly, I think the first thing is you don't know what they look at. What better person to tell us what they look at than them?
Just for a minute. Yeah. And when someone files a motion to dismiss an IPR, what usually happens? Do you know? I mean, because it's not always in this circumstance that somebody would file a motion to dismiss an IPR. For example, there might be settlement or other reasons why a party would move to dismiss. So do you have a general answer to that question?
Yes, discretion at the PTAB. And I want to use this as...
Do you know what they look at?
I don't know exactly.
Even discretion requires some criteria.
I mean, is the criteria, you know what, we've got a lot of cases.
But,
and the party is saying that they don't want to pursue this anymore, and so we're done. I mean, do you have any view at all on
this? Well, I'll tell you my discussion. I'm not PTAB counsel. My discussion with PTAB counsel is on the eve of a decision from the PTAB. You could say we've settled our case, and the PTAB could say, okay, we're done with it. They have discretion all the way through, which is what one of the things that distinguishes this case.
But they have discretion, yeah, and that's kind of different. Then they get to decide under the statute, right, whether they think the public policy of invalidating an invalid patent transcends a settlement. They get to pursue cases that are settled. They get to try to enforce them on their own, right?
My understanding is they have that discretion, yes.
Okay, but this is kind of a different kind of circumstance. Right.
It is, and obviously the timing has put us in a precarious position because when we first received the preliminary injunction order from the district court, they had not instituted the proceedings yet. They instituted those proceedings in August. So who knows what the PTAB would...
What if they decide that the patent is valid? Does that move this whole case too? Because you're not gonna invite relitigation of the validity issue before the district court if you've got a valid patent.
No, but I can assure you that the defendant will go to the district court and change their claim constructions and argue new grounds for invalidity, and we will be fighting this front again after having already been successful at the PTAB.
You've got new grounds.
There are some estoppel issues of raise or could have raised,
right.
But they've already said in phone calls with counsel that they will be proposing
well,
a narrower claim
about
construction.
The phone calls.
Right. Well, no, but the point is that they get two bites at the apple. In one case, they can go broadest reasonable interpretation at the PTAB and then come back to the district court if they've lost at the PTAB and say, look how narrow these claims are. They don't cover our product.
Yeah, but they can't come back to the district court and say, never mind, we think this form selection clause is really broad and gives you exclusive jurisdiction versus the PTAB. The district court is not going to let them shift gears.
Not on the forum selection clause,
right.
But on the merits of the invalidity issue. And again,
so if you prevail on the forum selection clause, then they get to re-adjudicate this.
If we prevail on the forum selection clause, let's keep in mind two clear things. The whole world can go ahead and file PTAB petitions. MergeSource acknowledges that. Anybody can file them. You don't need standing to file a PTAB petition. And MergeSource has
But nobody has – that's a little weird, though, because we are, you know, the privity issues and acting on behalf of someone are getting pretty tight. So they can't just wink, wink, nod, nod, have their friends across the street do it on their behalf.
Certainly, Merch Source cannot have a proxy file for them, but Company X that doesn't like these patents can file at the PTAB. They are not estopped. Merch Source has filed counterclaims in the district court, Northern District of California, local patent rules, tech hub of the United States. They have filed counterclaims for invalidity. They can pursue their invalidity defense in a perfectly appropriate
their
form.
Their view is that they can pursue it in both forms, just like anybody else, notwithstanding the forum selection clause in the MLA.
Yes. And
one question I have, it's a small housekeeping question. One of the arguments made was that Dodo Case didn't transfer its rights and obligations under the MLA to DDC. But isn't that taken care of by Clause 13.13 in the MLA, which specifically says that the Dodo Case can transfer its, can sell its patent if it chooses to, but all rights and obligations under the MLA will flow to the new owner of the patent?
Yes, that is exactly right. And I believe that the exact language of 13.13 is that the transfer can occur provided that the rights and obligations set forth in this agreement shall run with the title to the licensed IP. So they're arguing there wasn't an assignment of the MLA officially. It was the causes of action. What does that mean? We think the causes of action assignment was enough, but 13.13 confirms that transferring the IP, the patents, which is undoubtedly transferred, necessarily transfers the encumbrance to the patents, i.e. the MLA, and therefore there is that assignment. So I think 13.13 conclusively defeats the motion to dismiss on that ground.
I know your time is up, but I want to pursue just a little bit kind of the precise issue we pursued with your friend with regard to precedent. So there's a two-part question. One is, does Ninth Circuit law apply or does our circuit law apply? And then second, assuming your argument is that our law applies, what is there about Texas Instruments and their argument about differentiating that case and why that case does not control?
So I think, first of all, even Minetti-Ferro says federal law applies to the construction of a forum selection clause. And then, of course, goes on to review Ninth Circuit law. I believe that there should be, especially in the patent context, resolution to the extent there's any circuit splits. And we've seen the Second Circuit rely on the Phillips test, looking at a dictionary definition. We see the Ninth Circuit, maybe looking back at Minetti v. Ferro. If there's any difference between these, and I suggest there may be because Merch Source in their briefing has a very shifting position on exactly what arising out of or under means. Does it mean strictly interpretation of the contract? Does it mean arising out of the duties, obligations, and rights under the contract? But I think, getting to your second point, is that...
Well, your view is that our law...
That your law would apply and that Texas Instruments would be sound law in this regard. And I would suggest that in connection with, as a preliminary matter, this was never raised at the district court. The district court had no opportunity to consider this.
Remind me,
The issue of arising out of or under having some magical meaning in law. What they did was say, here is Minetti v. Ferro. I think arising out of or under appears once in their response brief. They cite 37 cases. They don't cite Bagdasarian, and they accuse the district court and plaintiff in their appeal briefing saying, ignore this large body of case law, including Bagdasarian. Bagdasarian was never cited. Right? It was never cited below. So the district court is not omniscient. The court is capable of considering the facts.
Just remind me, did the district court rely on Texas Instruments? I can't remember at this juncture.
I do not believe the district court relying on Texas Instruments. I know the district court relied heavily on GenProtect from the irreparable harm stance, but I do not remember off the top of my head if the court relied upon Texas Instruments. But so I think, first of all, is that the Merch Source waived the issue about arising out of or under having some magical language. Because we can't go back and now argue this. Plaintiff could have made the arguments below for the district court based on some narrower interpretation. But I will suggest that...
Well, wait, you're not suggesting that when they get to the merits, they could raise this, right?
I'm saying that, yes, they could certainly raise it on the merits. I'm just saying that they waived it. That here we are in appeal kind of fighting, you know, a new target that wasn't below.
Well, okay, so let's assume that we disagree with you just for a minute. Mm-hmm. So your argument is that for purposes of the preliminary injunction, they did make this argument, so they waived it. But even assuming just for a minute that that's not so, then what is your response?
We win. And the reason why is interpretation of the contract is the strictest proposal that's been offered by Merck Source as to what arising out of or under means. This is inextricably intertwined, the invalidity argument. And let me go back. This is how this case started for the law students here. Merck Source came to Dodo Case asking for a license. They got a license in 2016. In 2017, Merck Source said to Dodo Case, there is a dispute, their words, not ours, there is a dispute over the royalty rate and royalties owed under the agreement. Dodo Case says,
and it's because the patent isn't valid.
They didn't say that.
Okay.
But Dodo Case filed a lawsuit and said, we're not going to sit here and, you know, have to deal with this every quarter when royalties are due. Are you going to pay or not? We are filing in the Northern District of California, per the forum selection clause, a breach of contract for breach of the MLA. What is a defense to the breach of the MLA? Invalidity. Section 6.4, 6. I have them here. Section 6.4, 8.2, 10.4, 10.6 of the MLA all talk about validity. The only consideration that Dodo Case brings to the table as a patent owner, licensor, is having valid patents. And the agreement acknowledges this. It says in the term sheet, this agreement is contingent on a valid patent. Elsewhere, it says that if ever these patents are determined invalid, the license terminates. 6.4 says you shall never challenge the validity. They took their defense to breach of contract. Their only defense, their only counterclaims in the district court are for invalidity. Not for non-infringement, only for invalidity. Their only defense to breach of contract, they ran to the PTAB instead of resolving it in the district court. That's unlike any other case that is before this court on the appeal.
What about their secondary argument, which is that even if the forum selection clause has been correctly construed broadly, there's a public policy argument that parties should not be forfeiting their rights or agreeing to forfeit their rights.
And what I heard counsel say earlier of a true forum selection clause that says you can never go to the PTAB agreed to by two parties would be invalid and unenforceable would be taking Lear to a new level, Lear 2.0. A massive extension of Lear, which, by the way, Lear, as evidenced in TMI products, is not a bright-line rule. It never has been. There's always been a balancing test in Lear. Settlement agreements avoid the Lear distinction. There might be others. For example, when a party comes to another patent owner and says, we would like to license your patents, does that create?
Does it take away the PTO's right to consider its own patents? I think that's what I heard him to say. That there's a public policy right in allowing the agency to reconsider a patent that it issued. But aren't there other ways that the PTO could reconsider? Could they do a sua sponte re-exam or something like
that?
Well,
I think two things. First of all, is that the only case they cite for this, you know, the PTO should be able to review its patents is Callaway. Callaway was based on the old pre-AIA re-examination procedure. This is now PTAB post-AIA inter partes review procedure, completely different statute. And I think what's important to note is that the PTAB in this case said, we will accept, we are prepared, we are authorized to accept filing of the motions to dismiss. It was in our response to the emergency motion originally. The PTAB, when confronted with this, said, we are prepared to authorize the filing of the motions to dismiss. They said, bring it. So if we're worried about the public policy from the PTO's perspective, what better entity to determine the PTO's public policy perspective than the PTO or the PTAB?
Can I just take 1 minute to ask you one final question, and I'm going to let your friend respond to this too. You know, I've described this kind of a quagmire that we're in now because we've got only the preliminary injunction in front of us, and it inures kind of weirdly harming you permanently and harming the other side potentially permanently. Would there be anything improper, or would we have authority to simply say in this case, we've already stayed the preliminary injunction, so it's on hold, and to just try to tell the judge, we're keeping this on hold because we think at a preliminary stage, resolving this really has unavoidable, irretrievable consequences. Go decide the merits, like hold. Would there be anything wrong or improper? I mean, you might not like that, but in certain respects, that kind of saves you some time, too.
Well, I think if what you'd be talking about is converting the preliminary injunction to a permanent injunction, sure. It's just going to be appealed.
We're not district court judges.
The district court.
We're not. We're, right. But if we're just holding the preliminary injunction and saying, look, there's too much going on here to be resolved at a preliminary stage that would not effectively finally resolve what's going to happen here. So we're going to hold this we're going to stay the preliminary injunction, and you guys just hurry up and decide the merits so one can review
this. I hate to break it to the lawyers to be in the room, but the courts don't move that fast. If this goes back to the district court for any purpose, the PTAB will have ruled effectively by the time. They're going to appeal. If this gets converted to a permanent injunction on the merits, they're going to appeal that as well. They're going to ask for an emergency stay of
But you're still in a kind of a quandary, because even if we let the preliminary injunction go, you still may lose. I mean, the PTAB may refuse to hold it, so...
And again, I think that the district court understood in entering the preliminary injunction the effect it was going to have, and in fact said, because they raised the issue, MergeSource raised the issue of, well, what about our one-year bar? And they said, you can't be complaining of a hardship that may occur to you when you voluntarily agreed to the forum selection clause.
Yeah, but that's kind of, I'm not sure what the authority is of the district court to say effectively, wink, wink, nod, nod, we know that the preliminary injunction is going to effectively be a permanent injunction. That kind of messes things up for us in terms of review. It wasn't a full record, so it's a problem.
Well, and again, the MergeSource has argued this is a matter of law. That is their entire appeal brief, other than their motion to dismiss that now starts raising facts that were never raised on appeal. They have said this is a matter of law. So I don't think that there needs to be evidentiary hearings, motions for summary. The judge can make the decision. In effect, the judge's preliminary injunction is the decision that, permanent or not.
So in view of the arguments and all we've heard here, which is, hasn't been entirely a process of clarity for me. Well, tell me exactly what your relief is. How do you view that? What is it we should do?
Simply affirm the district court's order. Again, the district court order was as narrowly tailored. I think the district court perfectly balanced the issues and kicked this decision to the PTAB. Said, send an email to the PTAB and request to file motions to withdraw.
But that's happened, hasn't it?
No, they sent an email, and the PTAB said, we're prepared to accept them. The second step that now was nullified by the...
No, we stayed, but the answer to Judge Wren is, we stayed
the
that.
The emergency stay in this court prevented the next step, which is actually filing the motions to dismiss.
The PTAB proceedings let the are PTAB, marching forward, right? Now, let me ask you, have you asked, has anybody told the PTAB about what's going on in this court and about this proceeding?
They were informed, obviously, up until the early stages when there was the stay. But I think after that point, other than in passing, and again, I'm not PTAB counsel. I'm not involved.
I understand. I imagine you must have to do some coordination. So what about, I know that there's some authority on behalf of the PTAB to extend these proceedings beyond a year to a year and a half. Has anybody looked into doing that?
I am not sure. This case was already extended. So when the petitions were filed in January, set a triggering deadline for the patent owner responses. That was already extended. This case is already behind the track that the PTAB sets. I'm not sure how flexible the 1 year from institution date
it's up
is.
To, I think it's up to either the and, chief judge or the director.
And this is what I believe
had attempted to do that.
And this is what I believe is a beautiful thing about the district court's order, is let the PTAB, who knows its proceedings, make this decision.
Okay. Why would the PTAB listen to the district court? And wouldn't that open the doors for district courts to kind of control PTAB proceedings?
Well, I think this is an extremely rare circumstance where a defendant takes the defense to a breach of contract claim to the PTAB in violation of a forum selection clause. This situation will only have the interplay between a district court and the PTAB when there is a forum selection clause that says, by the way, you have to bring your case in the district court. If there was no MLA, if there was no agreement between MergeSource and Dodo, or now DDC, or they could have brought the PTAB proceedings, right? If we had threatened them, oh, we're going to sue you, they could have gone to the PTAB. If we'd sued them, they could have gone to the PTAB. It's only the existence of the agreement that prevents them from going to the PTAB.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
questions that was asked was whether what proceedings would have to occur below in order to be able to determine whether a permanent injunction should issue. In other words, a final determination on whether the forum selection clause actually would prohibit your client from filing an IPR. What further proceedings do you think would have to be undertaken? Would it be something where it would just be decided on summary judgment, or what else would have to occur?
I think that the legal issue about the scope of the forum selection clause could be decided on summary judgment.
Do you think the court has already heard everything relevant to that?
No. I mean, I think that the briefing on the preliminary injunction was relatively short, to be honest. I mean, we've written a lot more briefs on the issue here than we ever did before the district court. For example, you know, the district court, we did raise the Minetti-Ferro decision with the district court prior to the preliminary injunction. And I think that that was pretty much the only case that the court had before it going into the preliminary injunction hearing in terms of the scope of the forum selection clause. The court did its own research and found some of these arbitration cases that were cited in her opinion. But like, for example, the Texas Instruments case that this court was never briefed or discussed below. And the court, I think, started from the premise that the MLA says that the contract will be interpreted pursuant to California law, so looked to California and Ninth Circuit law. And so the idea that the federal circuit law might apply to interpreting the forum selection clause wasn't briefed or raised below.
Okay, it's really, if the reason that we agree with you is narrow enough to just be on the irreparable harm issue, things, circumstances have changed because there's a different party here, and so we're like, doesn't that seem absurd? I mean, we're fighting over something that has nothing to do with the merits. I mean, if we were to send it back to the district court, that she ought to reevaluate her preliminary injunction. I mean, isn't it time to move on for her to decide the merits? I mean, going through another proceeding on a preliminary injunction would certainly not be in anybody's interest.
Right? I agree with that. I think we raised
it. Say it so it'll be on the tape.
You can indicate that I nodded, yes. I mean, I think we raised the mootness issue out of an abundance of caution.
I don't even understand the mootness issue.
Yes.
Because you're saying it's moot, and then you say vacate. We, you know, sort of like the case doesn't exist anymore, but we should vacate it and do something about an appeal that doesn't even exist. So I frankly didn't even get what you were asking for.
It seemed to us that the issue on appeal was moot because Dodo case is no longer a party to the PTAB proceedings. And so,
but we don't even know. I mean, we don't know. We're not in charge of the PTAB proceedings either.
Right.
We don't get to decide, at least at this juncture, who's a party there and who isn't.
No, I appreciate that. I think that we did not want to not mention it and then have it come out and be criticized or blamed for not having brought it to the court's attention.
On your policy argument about how it could run against policy in order for private parties to be able to enter into contracts in which they agree that they're going to go to the district court instead of the PTAB. Do you think that's undermined at all by the fact that the agency can, on its own initiative, seek re-exam of any patent that it wants to?
Is that true? I'm not aware of the agency being able to sue us.
It used to be able to, and it's possible I'm wrong, but when it used to be that pre-AIA, the director had sua sponte power to bring post-issuance proceedings, usually in re-examination, in order to challenge the validity of the patent. I don't know if for sure whether that was changed by the AIA, but if it did exist,
well,
let's say hypothetically, if there was that power, do you think that that would undermine your concern about the agency's ability to consider the validity of its own patents that it issued?
I don't think so, because I think as a practical matter, someone has to come forward to the agency and present some kind of art.
Even if that's true, even if so, and I don't know the answer to Judge Stowe's question either. I think the AAA may have obliterated that, but I don't know. But what the AIA affirmatively did was say that any member of the public, you know, you can, any member can come in and challenge it. So if we're trying to protect the public interest in not being subject to patents that should have never issued in the first place, that right of the public has not been affected. And somebody could come in tomorrow, certainly somebody who's ever sued by these patents or thinks they might be liable, any interested public party is not, they have the right to go to the PTAB. So why isn't that enough to satisfy the public policy concerns?
Because I think that, and this is the policy that the Supreme Court talked about in Lear, and that is that licensees are often the only practical parties with the interest, both not just academic, but, I'm sorry.
Was your client an exclusive licensee?
No.
And you agree, I understand you're taking a position, but that Lear doesn't answer the question. You're arguing for an expansion of what Lear said, right?
Yes, Lear just said that you could not contract away your right to challenge. It didn't parse through whether you could limit where you could bring that challenge. So it, I guess in a way it is an expansion of Lear. Or a focusing of Lear, if you prefer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We thank both parties. You've really been helpful to our consideration of this case, and the case is submitted.
All rise.
That concludes our proceeding for this morning.
All rise.